I apologize for our late start. We were trying to figure out who's on first back there. And I think we've got it figured out. it's my understanding that Fritz goes first, and then you go by Joshua or Josh? Josh goes second, Josh goes third, and goes fourth. Judith goes fourth, and then back to Fritz. Is that right? That's what we've got. Okay, well, at least we figured out where who is. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Ann Gardner. To my left, Justice Bill Meyer. I'm Leanne Dofino, and your cases are the only cases set for oral submission. Everything else is set for submission on the briefs. So you have our undivided attention this afternoon. If you'll call the cases. All right, thank you. Okay, Fritz, you're up.
May it please the court, I'll dispense with the introductions. You know my name, apparently. I'm going to try to keep this short. I only have 7.5 minutes.
Well, actually, you know that's flexible.
Well, I
if we're asking
that.
Questions, we will certainly give you more time because you need to answer the questions, and you need to be able to give full answers. So,
Your Honor, I will do my best. We brought this case up. Essentially, this is an interlocutory appeal from the denial of a class certification. Well, the parties agreed, and Judge Toshin agreed that we also needed to bring up essentially our summary judgment grounds, which were interlocutory. But essentially, they involve a legal issue that could substantially dispose of this case, such that at least the grounds, the way I've written them, could make all the taxes go away and essentially only make the penalties and interest that could still be due and owing. Hopefully that will go a long way once that issue is resolved in this court, instead of going back up and down. Hopefully you'll never have to see this case again. So this afternoon, what I plan on doing, and of course I'm available and prepared or semi-prepared to answer all the questions about the class certification appeal, I'm going to focus on the summary judgment grounds that the City of Aledo asserted before the trial court. Essentially, those arguments are twofold. I know you all have read the briefs extensively, and I have essentially two arguments. One of them is under a case called McPhail versus Tax Collector. Tax Collector of Van Zandt County. Essentially, under the facts of this case, what the case says is that even if there is no statutory authority for a back assessment, of course, I'm sure y'all are familiar what happened in the first appeal. We asserted a plea to the jurisdiction. It came up on an interlocutory appeal. That was a final judgment, dismissing the entire case. It was reversed. Justice Walker wrote an opinion that determined that the trial court had jurisdiction. And one of the things that had to be decided in that prior opinion was essentially that the statute that we were going over to do the 5-year back assessment didn't apply. Well, the first argument I'm making is that you don't need statutory authority to do a back assessment. Now, I will readily admit that that's not our best argument. It's just logically it's the one that I would assert first. The better argument of the two is the next one, which is essentially, I don't care what happened in 2008. The court can assume that anything that happened in 2008 with the back assessments, with the tax bills being sent out, that they are void, invalid, ignore them, pretend they did not happen at all. Under a case, and I had to go back a long way to find this one, and I didn't find it until after the first appeal, I'll be very honest, is George versus Dean. Under the facts of that case, there was a school district tax that did not appear on the countywide tax rolls. And essentially, it was written in for some property owners, and it wasn't written in for other property owners. And it's, you know, the property owners where the amount of the school district tax did not appear on the countywide tax roll, they claimed that their taxes were essentially invalid. And of course, when you're reading this opinion, please keep in mind that the Court of Appeals opinion that was overruled appears at the first. I always get confused on that. This is what the Supreme Court back in 1877 said. The failure of the assessor to assess the property of the two taxpayers was just such, an assessment, however, and essentially what we need for a valid tax, and my ground for summary judgment is we have a valid tax. What happened in 2008 to attempt to back assess the taxes and send out tax bills, it doesn't matter because in 2003, 2004, 5, 6, and 7, we always had a valid tax. Those taxes have been paid, and there's no claim for a refund. Essentially, there's two things you need for a valid tax. You need a tax levy. We have that. In the record appear the ordinance from each of those tax years, where the Alito City Council adopted an ordinance that says all taxable property within the city limits of Alito, we're assessing this tax rate, $400 valuation. The tax rates are not challenged. They are valid under the statutes. Nobody's saying that the actual levy of this of these taxes are invalid. The next thing you need a levy, and you also need a valid assessment. Now, what's an assessment? And that's what the George v. Dean case goes into. Like I said before, that was a case to where some school district taxes were left on off the countywide tax roll, and were not the amount of the taxes were not supplied. And this is what the Supreme Court said way back in 1877 about an assessment. An assessment is an altogether different thing from the tax roll. By the assessment, the liability of the taxpayer is fixed. It ascertains the facts and furnishes the data for the proper preparation of the rolls. To make an assessment, the officer or tribunal to whom the duty is committed is required to ascertain and make an inventory or list of the property and to estimate or determine its value. When the property is listed and valued, the amount of the tax for which the owner is liable is merely a matter of arithmetical calculation. While this amount should be shown and exhibited on the tax roll, if properly prepared, it's not an essential part or prerequisite of the tax. Essentially, all they're saying is you have properties listed, you have the values of the properties listed, you have an officer or tribunal somewhere that has levied the tax rate, and all you need to do at that point is perform a very simple mathematical calculation. In other words, multiply this number by this number, and then we get that final tax that's owed, due and owing. And what the Supreme Court said is that if you have all those numbers to perform that last little calculation, you have an assessment. And anything that you need after, or another way to put it is, you can't invalid the tax or say that the tax is invalid just because there was no multiplication done and it wasn't written down in the right place. And essentially that's what they're claiming here, is that in 2008 there was no valid statutory authority to go back and to back assess these taxes. Well, the assessment had already occurred under George versus Dean. Essentially what they're saying is Well, there was no statutory authority, so you didn't have a right to add it to the tax rolls for the 2008, and you couldn't back assess in 2008. I don't care. Forget about it. Assume that's invalid. Go back to 2003 to 2007, and under George versus Dean, we had a valid assessment and therefore a valid tax. Now, that is not to say, of course, that leaving a tax off the tax roll does not have its implications or its consequences. The Supreme Court in George versus Dean, they go on to say, look, if you don't have a, if it doesn't appear on the tax roll is essentially a warrant for the collection of the tax. And if you don't have it on the tax rolls, well, you can't judicially collect the tax, you can't foreclose on the property. Well, that's not really a problem for my client because we never did that. We just sent out bills that said, please pay the tax. We never went to the courthouse. Well, everybody paid, so we never had to go to the courthouse. So essentially, under George versus Dean, we believe that the summary judgment ground should have been granted. And essentially, we should have gotten a ruling from the court that at least the taxes, this is not talking about penalties and interest, because if we couldn't judicially enforce, then you couldn't get penalties and interest. But at least for my client, that's a little north of $2,500, not the over $300,000 that we'd have to pay back if we have to pay back the actual taxes themselves.
Can I interrupt for one second?
Absolutely.
I'm a little confused. I wasn't on the prior panel. None of us were. But somebody went to the courthouse. Was it just City of Willow Park?
It was just the City of Willow Park that went to the courthouse and originally sued. The initial named plaintiff is Mr. Todd Brennan and his and Valerie Smith. They were the property owners.
To collect Willow Park, the taxes.
But not, I'm sorry.
To collect the taxes.
Yes, but essentially they never had to go through the process of collecting the taxes because those tax collection claims were dismissed because the taxes were paid. My client never initiated any collection proceedings. I wish that was because of the advice I'd given them. They just decided they didn't want to. Given the political nature and the unfortunate circumstances surrounding this case, they didn't want to do it.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Carden makes some arguments about why you should ignore George versus Dean, and one of them is, it's really, really, really old, and the tax code has been adopted since then. Well, that's all fine and good, but what Mr. Carden is, I'm sorry, I'm out of time.
Unless go ahead. Question, I'm gonna ask you a question, even though you're out of time. How much money was collected, how much in taxes was collected by your client for the tax years in question? I'm talking now about all of the tax years, not 2008, was it 03 through 07?
Yes, Your Honor, 03 through 07. And let me be very clear. A tax bill was sent out and the taxes were paid. We never initiated collection proceedings or a collections lawsuit, a delinquent tax lawsuit. It's over $300,000. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's north of $300,000.
Okay, well, I'm trying to understand clearly. And maybe I need to dig more into the appellate record, but I want to understand clearly how the taxpayers knew how much money to pay your client, the City of Aledo, and I assume that was because they did receive a tax bill.
That is absolutely correct.
And then they paid that tax bill.
They did pay the tax bill.
All right. Thank you. That's all I need to know.
And I have another question, too, going back into the record. Probably. Were there some homeowners in both cities or either city that were on the tax roll and some that weren't?
All of these properties and all of these taxpayers were on the district tax, within the district tax records and on the district appraisal roll. What happened is they weren't coded. It was essentially a mistake, a miscommunication when the city annexed some property. That was never communicated to the appraisal district. And for years and years, which that's not in the record, we just know that
Okay, that was my next question. Did it only go back to 2003, or was that because of the statute?
This is not, that was because of the statute.
Okay.
And it's not on the record, but I believe that one of the subdivisions that's subject to this lawsuit has been getting off without city taxes since I was in kindergarten. So, but essentially because of the statute, we thought we could only go back 5 years. And the statute of limitations had run, and of course, as I said before, under George versus Dean, we can only ask nicely. We can't essentially judicially enforce the taxes unless they appeared on the roll. But the taxes themselves are valid. In the case there's any other questions, I'll have a seat.
Was there anything else you needed to say?
No, Your Honor, I think I can probably address those on rebuttal because...
Okay. All right. Thank you. Josh.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I have... I got to be part of this case from the beginning, and it's been an interesting journey to explore the intricacies of the tax code, and probably more importantly, explore the realm of the tax code versus the common law. And that's really one of the problems that is presented by the City of Aledo's argument on summary judgment, is the tax code being that pervasive regulatory scheme that this court presumably and many sister courts have written about in Texas Supreme Court. Once you have that, you no longer rely on the common law remedies without some really good reason to do so. And in this case, the tax code dictates everything from soup to nuts as far as how properties are added to the rolls, how they're appraised, how the assessment happens, when the assessment happens, what happens if there's an error, and then what happens when it comes time to issue a refund or alternatively impose penalties and interest. There is no wiggle room in the tax code based on its language to do in what Mr. Hammonds did in this case. Mr. Hammonds wears two hats. He wears the chief appraiser hat, and in that role, it's his job to make sure all the codes are correct on the properties. However, he also wears the hat as the contractual tax collector for the taxing entities in this case. And he testified in the record that when he made the changes in this case, he did so as the tax assessor collector. He made a journal entry. He made an accounting fix to say, okay, we need to go get these taxes. Now, the common law case, the McPhail and the George cases that Mr. Quast was just talking about, there's no five-year discussion in those cases. The 5 years in this case came about because Mr. Hammonds was strictly applying his version of Tax Code Section 2521, where he believed it was his responsibility to use the statute that talks about property that's actually been omitted from the rolls to go back and back assess those properties for 5 years. Now, the problem with that, as the first panel found, was omitted property has a meaning under the tax code, a very specific meaning, and it means property that's actually absent from the appraisal roll. In this case, the properties were all on the appraisal rolls and had been for years. They just didn't have the code, as Mr. Quast said correctly, that would indicate its taxability in either the City of Willow Park or the City of Aledo. So once that mistake... that was the mistake. The mistake was using the tax code to do something the tax code did not permit, and this to go back 5 years and try to add properties. There is a remedy for any city who faces this problem of, hey, you're not collecting taxes, you should be for us, and the solution is to file a challenge petition. That is the taxing authority's exclusive administrative remedy to fix something on the rolls. It's not that George and McPhail stand for wrong propositions, it's that they have been completely superseded by this regulatory scheme. The idea, even in the George case, and I pointed this out in the brief, is that even in that case there were two lists. There was the assessor's initial list that had the properties listed and their values, and somehow those numbers didn't make it onto the final tax roll. And the court said, well, it was on the list. It was already there. The amounts were all settled. The levy was already done properly. So we know what the number should have been. But in this case, the list was, these properties weren't even on the list to be taxed. And in replacing the old regime of the tax collectors being sort of standalone entities where they would handle the appraisals, they would handle the searching out of property to be taxed, that's all been done away with and replaced in 1979 with essentially the tax code as we know it today. So for purposes of summary judgment, my argument, first of all, is that McPhail and George don't override the exclusive remedy provisions of the tax code. To this day, Aledo and Willow Park had a remedy. They had a remedy in every single one of those years that the properties had not been taxed. They were bound by the statute to exercise that remedy in each of those years where there was a problem. The Atascosa case refers to the limitation on the challenge petition process. It's not a five-year look back. That's for exemptions. That's for property that's actually been admitted. But the text of the statute makes it clear that the challenge petition process applies to any record that fails to identify the city in which it should be taxed or any other taxing jurisdiction. Obviously, in this case, the cities are the important ones. So as to the applicability of George and McPhail to this case, I think those cases can't apply to a situation where the remedies have been spelled out exclusively in the tax code itself. The process for the first panel decision in this case, Justice Walker did an excellent job of explaining why the 2521 could not apply. So we're not having to re-ask that question. Now it's a question, is there some lingering common law remedy that should still exist apart from the exclusive remedy that we're arguing is in the tax code, that challenge petition process? And the difficulty, again, is if we're blending the tax code and the common law, then that permits the taxing authorities to sort of pick and choose which ones they're going to take. I find it interesting that under the tax code, if there's an error that is fixed through the tax code, the refunds are automatic. If there is a ruling at the ARB level or at the district court level that says the value placed on the house was too high or this property wasn't taxable for some reason, the money comes back. That is the statutory structure. So as long as everything's done inside that statutory structure, everything's fine. In this case, Mr. Hammond stepped outside of that structure the moment he sent these tax bills out. There was literally no authority in the tax code for him to do that. The records had not been changed through the ARB process. No challenge petition had been filed. And he sent the bills the same, essentially in the record, the same time that he made the change to the records. That's not the tax code process. That's not the tax code way. And that's the error that we're suggesting was committed. And it's the one that should warrant, at the end of the day, a refund of these monies because they weren't taxes. They never came within the ambit of the overall tax code structure. And once you have a situation where a tax assessor has collected something that he had no warrant for, in the case of that's the old case that I cite, the Orange County case, that the court said that collection is void because there was no legal ability for the tax assessor in that case to do what he had done. Now, the other big question in Mr. Kwas's summary judgment motion.
Before you leave what Justice you're Meyer. Discussing, Mr. Cardin, I'd ask you to help me with a couple of things. First, where is there language in the tax code that specifically preempts prior common law?
It's not there.
In favor of the tax code.
It's not there, Your Honor. That's not where I could point the court. What I can point the court to is cases like Jim Wells County that basically say when there is a pervasive regulatory scheme, we defer to that scheme that the legislature set up. And that's important because of all the taxpayers who've tried to say, well, we should be able to come in and protest our taxes outside of this process. And the courts have uniformly said, no, there is a pervasive regulatory scheme. You are stuck with the remedies and the administrative process in that scheme. There's no room for you to simply come in and try to circumvent the tax code by filing some other motion.
Do you rely upon a specific definition of the word assessment that's defined in the tax code?
Oh boy, it may not be the word assessment, Your Honor, but it's the assessment process is very carefully defined.
I warned you that I was in the legislature in 79.
Then you well remember this time frame.
That worked on this bill and ultimately passed it.
Okay.
And I don't recall there being a definition of assessment in the code.
I don't think there is a definition of that word, Your Honor. What is carefully defined, in my opinion, is the actual process of going about doing it, the order and the timing.
Last question I have for you is that, in terms of these taxes that Mr. Cross was speaking about, that were paid, were they all paid at the same time in the same year?
I do not believe the record reflects the same time in the same year, Your Honor. They were all paid after the bills went out in 08. They were paid,
All right, well, I didn't ask it right. Let me ask you a different way.
Okay.
Were these 203 through 207 taxes paid prior to 2008?
No.
All right.
They were not.
And last thing, I said last while ago, but I mean it this time. Was there any double payment of taxes to both the city of Aledo and the city of Willow Park?
There was no double payment, Your Honor. These subdivisions are in separate cities. Exhibit 1 in our appendix, Exhibit 3 is the master list, and it shows the different subdivisions and which city they're in, and actually the amounts. It's a little over 300,000, and it's almost dead even split between the two cities. Actually,
all right. I just want to be careful. There wasn't any question that someone paid twice.
No one paid twice, Your Honor. But there's also no question that the cities charged penalty and interest if anyone paid, in their opinion, late. And so some of that amount includes penalty and interest payments. But we know how much they paid, we know who paid, we know the date that they paid. And again, I want to, because of the way you asked that question, Justice Meyer, I want to make sure I'm clear on this. These people already had paid their taxes to the county, to the hospital, to the community college, to all those other places, were already on the tax rolls for those taxing authorities. The only thing missing in this case was a code tied to that property that said, oh, and by the way, along with Parker County and the hospital and the community college, this property should also be taxed by the city of Aledo, or in other cases, the city of
Aledo. So they'd already paid all their taxes to all the other taxing entities save the city of Willow Park.
Correct, because the city, the appraisal district did not have those codes for each of those cities in those on those subdivisions.
But if I'm understanding Mr. Cross' contention, the value of the properties were already listed and were not in dispute.
That's correct, Your Honor. The values were all listed. The tax rate had already been listed. And, you know, presumably budgets had been made and spent in those, you know, those by the cities in those 5 years. And so when they added these in 2008, my contention is under the tax code, they should have been added via the exclusive remedy process that says this is where you do it. You file a challenge petition, and then that's not what happened.
Thank you for answering my question.
Thank you. And on the voluntary payment rule, I believe we've briefed that pretty extensively. That's the other difficult question in the summary judgment, and it also bleeds over into the class action segment of this argument. It appears from the district court's order, Mr. Judge Towson's order, that he relied heavily on the voluntary payment rule as the reason to say there's no typicality or commonality among the class members, that we have to get into the minds of each one of these taxpayers as to whether they were paying under duress or not. The voluntary payment rule is one of those rules that doesn't show up very often. I believe the Supreme Court's ruled on it twice in the last 40 years. And in making that ruling, I believe the district court stumbled over the confusion that arises is when you have a statutory scheme that imposes, by its own terms, a form of economic duress, in this case, penalties and interest, I find it remarkable that despite the questions about whether these taxes were ultimately going to be found legal or not, everybody paid. That's to a person. Everybody paid, including any assessed penalties and interest. That right there should be a big key as to be showing the court that's how powerful this system is, and that's how strong the duress really is well, that even when there's a possible question. I'm sorry, Justice Gardner.
Excuse me, I was interrupting.
That's
I apologize.
Okay. You're allowed to interrupt me.
Thank you. I just had a thought.
Go ahead.
In addition to the penalties and interest, though, the city's also had the tax lien.
Correct. Correct.
And that's pretty powerful.
Very powerful, and that lien was mentioned in the record document several times in the communications that were sent out. It's pay this, and I see my time is up. If you let short answer here.
You tell us everything you need to tell us.
Okay, thank you, Justice Stofan. I appreciate that. The lien was mentioned. The penalty and interest were mentioned from the very first communication Mr. Hammond sent out when he was sending out these tax bills. The levies mentioned the lien. The lien is constitutional. All of those things together, and from our side, absolutely demonstrate the coercive power of the state in saying, this is what will happen to you if you don't pay these amounts. And so to suggest then that we have to go person by person and ask, well, how much duress did you feel when you got that tax bill is unnecessary. The Loewenberg case in particular talks about you can imply that as a matter of law. And by getting the voluntary payment rule wrong below and finding that it applies, I believe that tainted the entire class certification process, because you take away the voluntary payment rule and there's the only thing left to talk about are the amounts, and those aren't in dispute. There's literally nothing left that the court would have to analyze to see is this class cohesive or not. The only remaining question would be, are there any opt-outs? Like the Aledo City Councilman who's in the record saying, I'm happy, I'll leave my taxes in place. That's Mr. McElroy's right, and he should be given the ability to opt out of a class action. So I obviously there's a lot more we could talk about. If there are any other questions, I'm happy to answer those.
Any other questions?
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. Let me think now what it was. Does the record show whether all those payments were made by the taxpayers, the homeowners, after this suit was filed by Willow Park?
Some were paid prior and some were paid after. I believe the dates are actually in there. This case was filed in October of 10, 4 years ago. I believe 4 years ago, this last week. Some had paid by then, others had not. This case started as a collection suit by Willow Park, mm-hmm. and there were four or five that were filed in that time frame. But again, all those individuals ultimately paid, so to prevent the continued mounting of a pretty hefty rate of penalty and interest, that would be an astronomical amount if it still remained unpaid today. So that's there were some that paid before, there were some that paid after, and frankly, there were some who filed ARB protests and many, many more who did not.
What were the results of those protests?
No change. And frankly, there couldn't have been a change because the ARB is not legally permitted to review the actions of an assessor. The ARB's role stops as soon as the appraisal roll is finalized, except for changes to the appraisal roll. So that's, again, that's one of those reasons why we say all of those differences don't really matter, because the single action that we've challenged here is Mr. Hammond sending a tax bill and then collecting those taxes on behalf of the two cities. Since he didn't use the tax code to do that, we're saying those aren't taxes. They're void, and they ought to come back to the taxpayers.
No, I guess not.
I'm finished.
All right.
Thank you, Justice Stefano.
Now, is that 15 minutes? Okay. I think that's both of his 7.5 minutes. Okay. So you're up.
A little confusing. who's going where? May it please the court, I would like to address the issue, and I feel it's just a very glaring barrier to class certification here, which is, as Mr. Cardin touched on a moment ago, we've been discussing it or arguing about it as the voluntary payment rule. But in reality, and I don't know that I made this clear enough in my brief, frankly, on behalf of the City of Willow Park and the appraisal district, but it's not just the voluntary payment rule that we're dealing with. We are dealing with the fact that the tax code actually codifies the voluntary payment rule, because the tax code specifically provides certain ways that you can pay a tax and have it not be voluntary, and that you can get a refund. There's certain provisions in the tax code that do that. And so it's really a confusing and sort of simplistic to say that, oh, the voluntary payment rule is antiquated and doesn't apply anymore, because that's not the case. In fact, the Supreme Court in Miga versus Jensen specifically said that, yes, the voluntary payment rule doesn't apply very often, but that's because it's been codified into statutes that provide for the means to obtain a refund. And that's what we have here. We have the tax code provides that if you want to get a refund, you can. You can pay a tax under protest. And then if you do that, it's not a voluntary payment. And it's very ironic that Mr. Cardin talks about the fact that, I mean, he acknowledges the fact that if these taxpayers would have protested and paid the tax under Section 4208, which I've briefed, this wouldn't be an issue. They would automatically, he said, they would automatically get a refund.
How does that prior opinion of this court not take care of that, though? Didn't the prior opinion hold that the protest provisions do not apply because
Your Honor, I want to distinguish what I'm talking about from what the prior opinion held, because that is a very good point here. The prior opinion held that the court had jurisdiction to hear their complaint because the chief appraiser / tax collector, they held that his actions in sending the tax bill were ultra vires. Of course, we argued that he didn't just send a tax bill, he also sent a notice saying you can come in and protest. But you're right, the prior opinion said they didn't have to do that. But my point is not that they had to do that. My point is if they would have done that, they would have automatically gotten a refund. And secondly, even if they didn't do that, even if they didn't protest, there's another provision in the tax code, section 31.115, that says you can come in and pay a tax, and you can write on the instrument, on your check, or with a letter accompanying, saying, I am paying these taxes under protest. And they could have either paid under 4208, and by the way, section 4208 clearly says that if you do make a partial payment or a conditional payment, as it's called, under protest, that tax is not considered delinquent until the outcome of the appeal. So all I'm saying is that if they wanted to preserve their right to get this money back, they could have done that. They could have also gone in and paid the tax under protest, and then it wouldn't have been a voluntary payment. And my point is, Justice Gardner, that the tax code specifically codifies the remedies for a person seeking a refund, and that's my only point. I'm not saying the prior opinion says they didn't, you know, it applies to this case, because I really don't think it does. I really don't. We're not going back over what the other earlier decision held. Right now, we're merely deciding, were these taxes paid voluntarily? Did they comply, in my mind, it's the better way to say it, did they comply with the tax code remedies for paying these taxes and then getting a refund? That's the issue. And we've got to realize that, the Texas Supreme Court in Rourke, Cameron Appraisal District versus Rourke, the Supreme Court clearly said that you cannot certify a class action in a property tax case, period, end of story. It was a per curiam decision, which I think means this is so well settled that we don't really have to discuss it very much. You know, this is a property tax case. There are remedies under the code for doing these things. Now, I know that the earlier opinion said that in this particular instance, they did not have to protest, but the earlier opinion, the Brennan one, as I call it, said nothing about the fact that they were entitled to refund. In fact, just the opposite. The prior opinion specifically said, we are not going there. We're not going to decide that because that would involve fact issues that had not, you know, that are not before us, because the only issue that's before us in that case was, did they have to exhaust administrative remedies to complain about Mr. Hammond's action? Now, this is an entirely different issue. This is, they have paid the tax voluntarily, didn't have to pay it voluntarily, but they did. That's a totally different issue. And I believe the Rourke case applies to that. It's interesting that Mr. Cardin's brief, he says, well, Rourke doesn't apply because Rourke clearly only applied where there were fact issues involved. And that's exactly what we have here, fact issues. Did these people pay voluntarily or did they not? And I don't see how you can get around that. It's like the rubber meets the road in this case. The Supreme Court has said you can't do what they're trying to do, which is get a refund. It didn't address refund, but it clearly said where the tax code provides a remedy, you've got to utilize that remedy. Now, the court held that the tax code did not provide a remedy under the facts of that case. But remember, we're looking at refunds here, and I believe the tax code clearly does provide a remedy. In fact, it provides two or three remedies. It says, if you want to get a refund, you can do this, or you can do this, or you can do this. So we've got to believe the legislature was familiar with the voluntary payment rule when they enacted the tax code and when they enacted these provisions. And they said, okay, yeah, we're going to abrogate that rule by letting you do this, this, or this. I don't think we can just ignore that. I don't think that we can say, I don't believe that this court should just say that these taxpayers don't have to do anything. This is the exact thing that the legislature was trying to prevent, is coming in and trying to get refunds when you haven't made a sound, you know, for when you got the tax bill, when you haven't protested. You have led the taxing entities to believe that they're going to have that money in their coffers, and then you come back later, years later, and say that you want a refund. I don't think that that's allowed by the law. There's no duress. I want to speak to this. There's no duress as a matter of law, because yes, the taxing entities could impose penalty and interest on a delinquent tax, correct? But a lot of these were paid before they were delinquent. So there's no duress also because, as again in the Bolton case, and the Supreme Court referred to this in Miga versus Jensen, this is more like the Bolton case where the Supreme Court said, yeah, the voluntary payment rule does apply because the regulations that govern those student payments provided a remedy, provided that they could pay them and then get them back if they went through certain procedures. And that's exactly what we have here. They could have paid them and then gotten them back. This would not be an issue if they'd gone through the procedures of the tax code. And so it's exactly the same situation. And I don't think you could say that there's duress as a matter of law when the tax code specifically provides you a remedy. And that's the whole point of the tax code.
Well, didn't they first refuse to pay the taxes that were being asked of them? That's what our prior opinion says, that they refused to pay, and that's why Willa Park filed the suit to collect the taxes against at least some of the taxpayers.
Yes, Justice. The plaintiffs, the Brennan plaintiffs, and a few others. They were the ones, but everybody else paid. I'm not sure if everybody paid before. Well, clearly not everybody paid before the taxes went delinquent, because there was a tax suit filed by the city of Willa Park. But my point is this: a lot of people did, and there's evidence in the record. Again, commonality is important here. Not only is there no evidence in the record that any of these taxpayers complied with either 31071 or 31115, which they could have done and made the payment involuntary. So there's no evidence of that. And in fact, there is evidence that several of them did protest. But there's no evidence that those that protested made a conditional payment, as they could have, to preserve their remedies. So there's just no evidence of the kind of facts that would need to be that we would need to know in order to determine whether these taxes were paid voluntarily or involuntarily. That's my point. And it's a barrier to class action. So I guess I'm out of time.
Is there anything else we need to know?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that's it. I believe the voluntary payment rule and more importantly, the tax code remedies were required to be exhausted, and that's our point on the commonality issue, and I believe Rourke controls.
Okay. Thank you. Fritz?
Very quickly, Mr. Cardin's initial arguments in response to the summary judgment arguments I made earlier essentially contend that we have this case back there that very clearly supports what I think should be the result here, but essentially that the legislature has intervened in 1979-82 and essentially trumped all of that. Well, the court well knows, I think Justice Meyer brought up, that essentially you don't do that. The legislature doesn't do that, or when it wants to do that, it has to do so with unmistakable clarity. It can't overrule the common law by implication. And in this case, first of all the cases that talk about exclusive remedies, they concern a taxing entity going to a courthouse and attempting to enforce the tax or collect the taxes that way. And essentially my summary judgment theory assumes that the city of Lido would not have been able to do that. Essentially, only ask the question, were the taxes valid? Not whether would we have been able to go file a collection lawsuit, enforce a lien, perform a tax sale. Under George versus Dean, we wouldn't have been able to do that. And essentially, once the taxpayers from Lido got our tax bill, they could have legally just told us to go, you know, hug a stump. But they did receive a tax bill, and many of them paid. And the question now is, are those taxes valid, and do we have to pay a refund? Justice Meyer asked a very good question about there being anything in the tax code that specifically overrules George versus Dean. I'm going to say that absolutely there is not. And in fact, there's something that very specifically is consistent with George versus Dean, and it's Section 3101. And I think Justice Meyer had some concerns about, you know, they got this tax bill in 2008, and that's the reason why they paid the taxes. In other words, you want me to ignore what happened in 2008, but that's why they were paying the taxes. They got this tax bill in December of 2008. essentially 3101 subsection G, failure to send or receive the tax bill as required by this section does not affect the validity of the tax. Penalty, interest, the due date, the existence of a tax lien, or any procedure instituted to collect a tax. And it's my contention, Your Honor, that's very consistent with George versus Dean. There's nothing. Sorry.
What's that song?
It's a good song. I expect everyone to stand up, but I understand not everybody has allegiances that way.
It is a good song, Mr. Clark.
Your Honor, Mr. Carden goes into some very good explanation of the specific facts. And essentially what we had here, we had a district roll and district appraisal records that listed all the properties. And essentially they weren't coded for city properties. And so when you have a city tax roll, these properties were omitted. That is factually, in my mind, indistinguishable from what happened in the George versus Dean case. Compare the facts of this case and George versus Dean, I don't see that there's any difference, at least in the arguments or in the reasoning adopted by the Supreme Court in that case. A question was asked about the penalties and interest. Again, my motion for summary judgment is partial, and it assumes that we might have to pay back penalties and interest because, again, we couldn't judicially enforce the taxes, and therefore we couldn't charge penalties and interest for failure to pay them. So that is why my motion for summary judgment is partial, and I'm not contending that the court has to bless or that we don't have to repay those, because potentially we do. Very quickly, under the voluntary payment rule, you can imply duress, of course, but that doesn't mean you can establish it as a matter of law. And essentially what they're arguing is, well, you just got this statutory scheme, and what that means is the voluntary payment rule doesn't apply and we don't have to worry about it at all. There's no case, absolutely no case, that says that. There is a case, Loewenberg, that talks about duress being established, but that is in the context of a criminal penalty, not in a civil penalty, and it distinguishes Bolton, which is another Supreme Court case. There's nothing out there that says the voluntary payment rule is dead in this context, and that's what Mr. Carden is trying to argue. Regardless, there are some facts in this case, and I want to bring it up, that one of the potential class members is my mayor pro tem, and he's essentially submitted an affidavit, put it in the record, says that I voluntarily paid my taxes. If we certify this class action, then that means I don't get to litigate that with respect to anybody that's not a class representative. We believe that would be, unless the court has any questions, I'll sit down. I thank the court for its time.
Oh, I would like to compliment the attorneys on their briefing and their arguments.
Yes, thank you. We do appreciate it, and we appreciate you coming in to argue today. It's been very helpful. Your case is submitted, and since there are no other cases, you're free to go about your business anyway, but there's nothing for you to sit around and hear if you wanted to. And this court will be adjourned.